Hello everyone, welcome to the Vivek Idra Show. Today my guest is architect Kiran Chirma. And hello sir, thank you so much for doing this.
It's most welcome.
Yeah. It's an absolute pleasure. You don't do these things often, do you? So
No, never.
So I personally feel this is a privilege because, you know, me interacting with some industry professionals in Hyderabad, I feel this culture in Hyderabad is not there where, you know, people come together, do forums or have these conversations. I think we should help the fraternity as a whole. So, what is your take on this? Do you see this happening more often? Because when I go to Ahmedabad, cities like Ahmedabad or Mumbai, there is always something going on. You just come across architects as you just walk on the streets or something when you go to school. Right? So,
yeah, I think definitely it's something that is going to be quite useful. I think as far as for students and other people, I think I would see. And generally as a fraternity too, for architects, I think exchange of ideas and things like that are going to be, I think, useful for everyone.
Yeah. So, before we go into some of my questions that I have for you, and we've also put this on our social media handles. People did write in a lot of questions to me, so I'm trying to filter down these questions. But before we do that, can you give us a sense of you, your formidable years before starting this practice, and a little introduction about yourself?
I've done my architecture in JNTU, and then I've done my master's in the US. It was about like 1.5 years or so. I would say I've learned a lot in those 1.5 years that I was there outside, because the kind of teaching and other things that we kind of got there was, I think, very useful. Then I came back to India. I mean, I didn't want to work under somebody for a very long period of time, because in the US that's what you would end up doing. So I did end up coming back pretty quickly. I did my training, or I did work in an office there for about like 1.5 years or so. And then I came back, I kind of started fresh on my own. But at the same time, I did work with a firm called Sona & Kalapa Consultants.
Right. Right.
And that again gave me a lot of input in how a real professional firm actually works.
Right.
Because even at that point in Hyderabad, I think the offices were a bit small in Hyderabad and things like that, and how you work with the client and what all documents you actually give to the client and then how things go forward was very different. So I got to learn a lot from them.
Right.
And it's a very well-known firm, and then they do things in the right way in a way. So that was quite useful for me. And then I went on with my practice. They were here for about, I think, 4 years I was with them. At the same time, I was practicing on my own too. That's how we were actually associated. I mean, was the agreement with them.
So, are you saying while you were working with Soumya & Kalapa, you're also parallelly
Have my office. So, it was like a part-time thing that was doing with them. And I was taking care of their office, which was, they had just put in Hyderabad at that point. So, they were here for about 4 years, and that's the period of time I was with them.
Right.
And I was doing my own work, and it was known to them also. That's what the agreement was when I joined with them. So that also helped me in kind of understanding what I could do as far as architecture and other things were concerned. So and truly understanding what architecture came much, much later.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was doing stuff at that point, but slowly, I mean, the learning process came about, and then maybe couple of years or so, and then I really understood what I would want to do and things like that. And
right.
Then that's how I think it's been going.
So they were having projects in Hyderabad as well?
They were having projects in Hyderabad. They were doing, like, Elbit Diagnostics was one that they were doing, couple of other projects they were doing. They were also doing work for the US companies where they would do drawings and other stuff. So I was also taking care of that because I had some experience in the US
right.
and all that.
Right.
So that's what was going on about
right.
that time.
And then it was only till 4 years, and then they kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, they kind of stopped the firm here. I think because they were not getting enough projects here. And they have an office in Bangalore. I think sometime later they put up an office in Bangalore too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that still must be going on.
Right.
But they removed the office here, and at that point I did continue on my own as my office was there.
Right. If I can go a little back, when you said you did learn
a significant amount of architecture when you were in the US, when you were doing your master's. Can you kind of distinguish what's the architectural pedagogy or the difference in teaching between an Indian school and school in the America, United States of America? Or,
I think we did do learn a lot of stuff from our seniors in the college here, because we were always doing thesis for them or things like that. So that kind of gave us a direct knowledge of what we were supposed to do. But I think I didn't really understand what we are supposed to do as architects. We were just doing designs randomly. I mean, whatever thought process we could get, maybe it was more visual rather than being more of other aspects that you would want to do. And that's how it was. And then when I went to the US, it was more rigorous, I would say, because my course was like only 1.5 years master's. And we did work very hard, and we did learn some stuff which is more design oriented, and they would explain us why we would do a certain thing in a certain way.
Right.
And what are the uses of that in the building, not just functionally, but lot of other aspects of what architecture is supposed to be. So I think that, and it was very rigorous, that 1.5 years. So I think the learning process was very quick and it was good. But even at that point, I think after finishing also, I mean, I wasn't sure. I mean, now I come to know about it, but at that point, I didn't know what architecture was. I was still doing design and stuff like that. But later on, I mean, slowly it developed, and then I did learn what the client requires or what a building has to be and things like that. So that came much later, and then maybe I still don't know what exactly it is, but we kind of end up making it simple and normal in a way. So I hope, I think that kind of works in a way.
Yeah, and the transition between studying in an American university and then working in an American firm. How was that transition like? Was it, did you see the connect between the teaching that you had there to the practical experience of working in an American firm, or was that in itself completely different again?
No, it was, there was a connect between that.
Okay.
So the designs, I mean, we were, I mean, I joined a very small firm that was in Fort Worth, Texas, and I think there was a relation, and it wasn't very difficult to kind of convert what I was doing in the office, because I actually joined before I finished my master's.
Right.
So I think it was pretty smooth. I mean, the firm was good. They were doing smaller scale projects, so it was easy to get into design also even at that early stage.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of worked fine for me.
Right. And also, I just want to understand how their practice works in comparison to ours. Can you just briefly tell the differences?
First off, you're not even called an architect after you do your master's or you do your undergrad or something like that.
What are you called?
You are called an intern architect.
Oh, okay.
So that's the major difference. I think that's a useful difference.
Okay.
Because just after completion of your master's or architecture, you're not ready to actually build a building.
Right.
So you need lot of exposure as far as the site is concerned and lot of other aspects of architecture. So that you get to know once you work under somebody or for a longer period of time. I don't say it is for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It is for the most amount of people that do architecture.
Right.
And you do have to give a couple of exams which I thought were quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go through that.
Okay.
And then after like working for a couple of years, then you end up giving the exams. Once you get through the exams, then you are a certified architect. So only then you can call yourself an architect that way.
And at that time, were they using computers at that time, or was it drafting?
Actually, I just started off when I went to the US first. Before that, I never used a computer.
Okay.
So after I went there, I mean, the first assignment that we did, we had to work pretty hard to kind of understand stuff.
Uh-huh.
But in the office, we were already, I mean, everybody was already using computers then, at that point. Yeah.
And after that, you moved back to India.
Yeah.
Right. And then did you start your practice immediately, or you said it was in conjunction with
immediately actually.
Yeah.
As soon as I came back, I started my practice. And then also maybe couple of months later, I did join the firm in LA.
What would you say would be the optimum amount of time to work in a firm before you start your own practice?
I would say about 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
It ranges from people. I've seen some people who catch up really fast.
Right.
So probably they can probably work for 6 months, 1 year training or something, and then probably get onto it. But I think for some, but maybe it will be useful for everybody to kind of really work on site and things like that to come up with better projects. Yeah.
And how are your initial projects like? Did you see an evolution of your own practice from your inception to what you're doing right now?
As far as design is concerned, yeah, there is an evolution, a subtle, I mean, it won't be too drastic. Project-wise also, we've always kept ourselves to a limited number of projects to maybe a smaller scale too. We end up doing a lot of detail, so we kind of stuck to that right from the beginning. So, yeah, very subtle variation, I would say that.
And I'm just a little curious, when you take up projects, do you have your set of parameters that this qualifies as a project that I can take up, or how do you deal with clients in particular when there is a lot of commercial angle to, you know, the large number of clientele that we have in India?
We take up all kinds of projects, so we don't decide initially that this is going to go that way, because every project kind of goes different ways.
Right.
We are okay, I mean, doing anything, no restriction. Client wants a project from us, we are ready to kind of work for them. And yeah, each project takes different turns, diversifies. Some end up becoming really good projects, some stop in the middle, or some even don't end up finally coming out well. But we are okay with all kinds of stuff.
Right.
So, no restrictions.
And do you have this constant, these implications of vastu or some technical constraints, like, you know, on site where you're limited to certain amount of resources or a budget, and how do you tackle with those kinds of vastu?
Vastu is something that's very huge here.
Mm-hmm.
It's become a mandatory thing. So, I mean, we do have to follow whether you believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see is, like, clients have their own vastu consultant. So, they give us the guideline. I mean, we do the basic design first, and then they end up putting their guidelines on that. And finally, it's the client who wants it. So we end up kind of catering to those requirements. But what we always try to do is, whatever restrictions are given to us, we do try to give a better solution for that situation. So it might end up being a simple rectangular room, but we can also make it better as far as the space is concerned by doing certain basic architectural things to that. So that's what we try to give importance to in that sense.
Do you see any virtue in vastu?
Particularly no, because all the vastu aspects or the principles that are there can be changed by way of design or something like that. Let's say southwest, you don't have lot of sun, you have actually lot of sun,
right.
So they say you have smaller windows, which is a true virtue, but there are lot of other ways by which you could negate that.
Correct.
Function, like, for example, you have a big window but you have a wall which is close to you, a landscape wall or something like that. So those can always be worked around, so it doesn't have to be a refined rule as such. You can understand it. I mean, why are they doing it? What are the useful features of that? And then kind of interpret it in a different way. But yeah, it doesn't end up like that in like the place that we are in right now.
Right, nice. And you use a lot of wood extensively in your projects.
Yeah.
What is your fascination with this
wood? It's basically natural materials, I would say.
Mm.
Not particularly wood, but yeah, you might end up seeing a lot of wood in the projects that I've done. But any natural material, we would kind of use it. We generally avoid artificial materials. The reason being, natural materials, other than just the appearance of it, has lot of other qualities that it can impart to the space in a way. So I would say even the thickness of the material also changes how the space is perceived. Let's say you take a stone which is 18 mm to a stone which is thick, like about say 200 mm or something like that. How you feel in that particular space changes. That doesn't happen when you use like an artificial material. Artificial material is more visual, I would say. So while looking at the design, the natural materials give a lot of feel to that space. So that's why we, through all the practices or whatever we have followed, the spaces that we have seen, we think they give some kind of feel to the space, in a way, which I think is very important.
What would your defense be when it comes to the angle of maintenance of this wood?
I would say wood is the most green product, I would say. If you are replanting them, it becomes even a better product. Maintenance wise, I think we, I mean, in India, we see buildings to be about 100 years old or something like that. So that's when people think that wood has a lot of maintenance, but I would kind of differ on that. I would want the material to age in a way, any material, I mean, for that matter. For a building, like any animal or human or something like that, as they age, I would also see materials aging, and that's what would actually give character to any building too. So if you see old historic buildings and stuff like that, people might not understand it, but they do like it to a certain way. So that again is imparted because of the material and its patina or the change of color and things like that. So yeah, I don't see wood being heavy on maintenance, because we actually use reused wood. We take it from old houses and then kind of build the entire house or something like that with those woods. So it ages extremely well, I would say, even 100 years, 200 years, and it actually becomes better and better because the strength of it improves. It doesn't bend after a certain while and things like that. The moisture content decreases. So I think it works extremely well in all fashions, I would say.
Okay. So, like, early on, do you have any particular influences or architects that you really studied about, or really that you found to be instrumental to your own practice?
I've been always following architecture, but I would say right now I would see, like, there's an architect called Sudhir Reddy here, Kritika Design. I kind of follow his architecture. Then Bijoy Jain, I would say, within India, and then I would say Peter Zumthor if you look at the world thing. So these are some of, maybe these are three architects which I follow, but I pretty much kind of follow anybody or anybody who's good, new architects, so doesn't really matter that way.
So amongst your contemporaries, you would say Mr. Sudhir Reddy is one what do you think is the current state of architecture or architecture quality in Hyderabad or in southern India?
Hyderabad, I see a lot of improvement. I think a lot of new architects coming in, a lot of good ideas, good things going on, and see the same thing all over India too. Some amazing architecture coming up.
And when we talk about architecture per se, here there are multiple practices of different kind of architecture coming up, because we have such a diverse range of climates or, you know, geography or cultures or anything. So, and then you don't really subscribe to the idea of style in architecture. But there are certain, to an extent, there is a certain set of standard details that each architectural firm has, and that in a way is, in an implicit way, a kind of like a standard style detail like that, I would say. So do you have like a particular statement of your architecture that would describe your particular practice? Or
As mentioned earlier, I think materiality is something very important. So that is something that we've been following. And the next thing that we do is, right at the inception itself, we do understand the surroundings, the climate, or especially the landscape if there is something. And there's always, right in the beginning of the design, we would like a connect between the landscape and the project that we're working on. So I think these are some of the very fundamental architectural rules that we follow. So style and other things, we wouldn't want to have anything. And whatever works for the project as we go about it, designing with the surroundings and all that, I think we would end up sticking to that. So in a way, we wouldn't want to have any prerequisite design ideology or something, I would say that.
I want to ask this, you know, I'm not sure, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I see a lot of architects, I mean, like, maybe of the previous generation or some in this generation, they don't have this need to put out their work, or they're not really very particular about publishing their work or marketing their work or anything of that sort. But this is a huge contrast compared to other firms around the world, where that's almost like the first thing they do after they finish a project. And in some way, I also feel that your work, being such a great volume of work, and there's so much to learn from your practice, and a lot of people have a lot of reverence to your practice and your work. But you kind of, I feel, shy away from all this, so...
Yeah, I mean, for me, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. It depends on person to person. I'm not very tech savvy. I don't have an Instagram account or Twitter or something like that. So, I'm not against it, but it's something which I would have to do an effort to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, probably when the need really comes up, I would end up getting into it. But yeah, as of now, I've been a little away from all these things, I would say.
Okay.
I wouldn't see it as wrong or anything.
Right.
It depends on each personality and how you would take it further.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely add to your project works and other things too. So, yeah.
Can you just give a small sense of the scale of your office right now? How many people are working here? How many projects do you take up at a time?
Yeah, we always, vary from about 6 to 10 at the most.
Mm-hmm.
So,
these are projects?
No, I would say the number of people working in the office.
Okay.
And the projects too, they would end up being about 15 or something at a time that we would be working on.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't maybe cross more than that.
Right.
It's the kind of team that we have that we can handle is what we would end up doing in a way.
And this 6 to 10 includes you, the architects and the interns?
Yeah, everybody in the office. Yeah.
Right. And what is, on an average, would you say the amount of time do you spend on each project with respect to its scale?
The fastest we have done probably is going to be about 1.5 years for a house,
mm-hmm.
which also includes the interiors and everything,
okay.
which I would say is very short, at least
yeah.
from a regular detailed perspective
yeah.
of when you kind of finish it. But otherwise, yeah, different projects take different times. Some projects even go to about 4 years,
mm-hmm.
even a residential project.
Mm-hmm.
It varies, and the kind of project we would do, any kind of design. It doesn't have to be specific. We've done some pharma buildings, we've done hospitals, diagnostic centers, we've done houses, apartments. So anything to do with design, I think the basic principles of how you approach the design process is set already. So I think you could do any kind of design.
Want to link this question to my previous question. When I say you don't really put out your work and you don't really market your work as much as others do, how do you get your clients then?
On word of mouth, and there are already some projects which are put out, so probably people look at that and then come to us.
Mm, right. So you said a project could vary from 1.5 year to, which is its fastest, to maybe sometimes even 4 years. Do your clients really get impatient at times, or what is their tolerance levels like?
I've been lucky to get some very good clients, and my clients generally, a lot of them have actually put in a lot of their own effort to kind of get the project done well.
Oh, okay.
So it was like a bonus for us too, because the project ends up well. I would give a lot of credit to them, because anybody to have so much patience, because there are so many elements in design and construction that as a layperson, they would get frustrated eventually. But some projects we were lucky enough, and in fact we do learn a lot from the clients too. So every project we get to understand what they are, what they need, and then how they take the process further. So it's been a lot of learning from the client. So each client has some set of things that they are very good at,
mm.
and that's what we kind of learn and then take it forward.
Right.
So I
want to ask this, where if clients are as cooperative, as supportive of giving time as much as, because there's a lot of details that you also do in your projects. Is it a comprehensive architecture, interior, landscape, furniture, or what's the scope that you take for each project?
Except for the landscape, we undertake everything.
We would undertake it.
Landscape too, we do hard landscape. Soft, I think we'll have to outsource it or something like that.
This has been consistent for all your projects, or were there times where you had to?
Initially, interiors weren't that important for
mm-hmm.
clients, for residences. So we would be doing only architecture like first 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, the interiors kind of for a house or anything became more important.
Mm-hmm.
Then we started handling those. So right now, if we take up a project, mostly we undertake the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So if I mean, you're taught or you went to an architecture school, but you're also taking up interior. So how do you progress as an architect to an interior design? Do you think it's necessary for them to also have a particular amount of understanding of interiors through formal education, or can a person actually instinctively also build?
I think being an architect, you will be instinctively a designer too. So I think, again, when I say the principles that you put forward for the design are going to be somewhat similar when you're doing interiors too. So I think, yeah, that's, I think, good enough.
So initially you had interior designers working on a project separately before?
No, actually nobody were interested in getting the interiors done earlier. They would just do the architecture, probably they would get their old furniture or buy some furniture and then kind of be done with that. But now the correlation between how the architecture, interiors, and then all that has developed a lot. So now we have the need to kind of curate all that stuff too, along with the architecture.
There's this interesting statement that by a very famous architect, I can't recall his name, that people who are into interiors, who are architects who are into interiors, should actually not give up interiors, because clients don't pay architects for architecture, they pay them for interiors. So
yeah. I think it's almost like half and half now. So the architecture, which actually involves a lot of things that are more important and that's more for a longer period of time, I would say, but now I think it's almost equal, like the architects and the designers are kind of paid almost same.
But I think they're more frivolous when it comes to spending money on interiors compared to, you know, they question every single aspect when it comes to a building rather than when it comes to interiors.
True. But in my case, by the time like we can come to the end of interiors and all that, the budget constraints come up. So we end up making the interiors very simple, and we locally purchase stuff within India. So interiors can be done at a lesser cost too. I mean, you don't have to fill up the whole house or anything. So, and sometimes we also leave a lot of things to the clients, like give them the basics and then they end up filling up the house as interiors. That sometimes actually works out even better, because it doesn't look like a set piece or something like that. It ends up making it into a home where, I mean, they live and they see all their stuff, what they have done together. I think that makes a better house, I would say.
And a lot of clients perceive interiors which are tacky to be good interiors rather than, so how do you deal with clients who have that perception already inscribed in their minds? Because you need to kind of shift the narrative from that to, you know, this.
It does happen, but because a lot of clients come to us looking at our work before, so they do have an understanding of what we do or what works, for example. So it becomes an easier transition to the interiors too. But yeah, things definitely happen.
So, Mr. Kiran, I actually want to ask you this, because there are a lot of, you're actually a JNTU alum.
Correct.
I'm also, we are also from JNFU. So, how was the teaching back then? Can you just give us some experience from JNTU? It's JNFU right now. So
I know. Yeah, as I said, I think we did learn a lot from the seniors. We worked for them, and they were these NASA and other.
You were part of.
Yeah, NASA, we were part of that. So we did work for that. So in that sense, I think that's the process that we kind of learned a lot of things, I would say.
So you would give certain amount of credit to NASA.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
What kind of competitions did you?
I don't remember very well. I think D.Y. Patel or something like that. We didn't win anything, at least the ones which I did, but. Yeah, I think the whole exposure of going to a different place at that point and meeting different people, and that's, I think, the first time we kind of saw the debate happening between design and explanation about that and the projects and stuff like that. So yeah, that was really good.
Can you give a sense of time frame when this was? Which year?
89 to 95.
Right. Okay. Where were the conventions held during that time?
Mumbai was one. Which I had been to, and I think there were a couple of other places. Yeah, the main was in Mumbai. I think it was Raheja College or something.
Raheja, okay. And who do you remember the part of the council from our college or?
No. It's been
okay.
A while.
No, I relate to this particularly because I was the unit secretary from our college.
Oh, it's okay. I know my
so
classmate Manoj was the unit secretary. Yeah, so.
Okay, yeah. There's a lot of nostalgia there.
I know. We also had a lot of elections and a lot of stuff going on before that too, which was fun too.
Yeah. And
so you were the unit secretary for that.
Right,
yeah. So
right.
That actually entails a lot of work and understanding too.
Yeah, that's debatable. But yeah.
No, it's always useful, anything of that sort.
Absolutely, yeah. And then was your transition between after you completed your graduation, immediate to going to a master's, or did you break for
No, nothing. It was immediate. Our course got delayed by about 6 months. Mm-hmm. We, I think, finished architecture somewhere in December, and Jan, I was in the US for my master's, so
mm-hmm.
not even like a month gap there. Yeah, but as soon as I went to the US, it was a little bit difficult to get accustomed to their system,
mm-hmm.
but it was okay in about 2 months or so, I think.
What were the challenges like when you
say
difficult?
I mean, the idea of teaching, the courses and other stuff were difficult. And I think being a very short course, it was very hectic initially. So even though we were used to working here, even in India for a longer period of time, a couple of nights without sleep and all that. But that was like a more continuous process there. So we would end up, mine was pure architecture, master's. So we had a lot of
just MArch.
MArch,
yeah.
So there were a lot of these assignments or things that we were given, and we ended up working till early in the morning, then going to the room, coming back about 10, 11, and then again sitting on the work.
Mm.
And the system was good. We had studios. Like each of us had like a set area, maybe 7 by 7 feet or something. And we would set up all our things there, photographs, the projects and everything. And interaction was also good because each person had next to you
right.
their workstation and things
right.
like that. So yeah, that was, yeah, no, I remember it was quite good.
Yeah.
That's something that should be replicated here because it's not
mm.
like a regular class that we attend.
Yeah.
Like if you see engineering or something like that, you go to a different lab.
Mm.
So here it's more about making stuff. Models were extremely important then, model making, and we used to buy cardboard, plastic stuff, and then kind of make models out of it. So understanding of the project was much easier, and then you could make changes, the space and other things, you could understand it better.
In India, was it completely, when you were in JNT, was it everything, everything was drafting at that time?
Yeah, it was. But I did learn computers just before leaving to the US, maybe 6 months or something. I did learn AutoCAD.
Yeah, I feel that's like a very interesting point of time where, because computers were just coming at that point. Maybe they were there before, but I think it was more accessible. It just started to get more
Correct.
Accessible at that time, and people started realizing the huge amount of benefit. What kind of software was there at that time? I don't know.
AutoCAD only at that time. That's what I learned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we worked on that for a longer period of time. But when I joined an office there, I think they had something called DataCAD. So
okay.
it was pretty similar to this, but I had to learn that and then kind of join that firm then.
Yeah, even now I feel there are a lot of AutoCAD ripoffs. So after that, I hear from my friends that there are like a lot of offices who try to find alternatives to AutoCAD which are I think for reasons at a cheaper rate
Correct.
To buy licenses and all of that. But all of them are mostly ripoffs of AutoCAD.
Must be.
What? How do you? So in India, in terms of exploration of design, how would you categorize this as a phase where the transition between our first generation of architects in India, like maybe Charles Corey or V.V. Kovashi, Raj Rawal at that time, and then there's this huge shift in, I mean, like we call them the modern architects and the postmodern architects, and now currently then the contemporary phase started. So how do you categorize that phase? What were you taught at that time? What were your major influences of architecture at that point of time in the 1990s or 1980s?
I don't remember particularly which kind or what, but we used to have a very small library. So we used to go there and try very hard to get some magazines and stuff like that, read through them and then see the projects that we've done. So I mean, what I would see is I wouldn't really understand what design was or why they did something like that, but we were only influenced by the visuals of the projects, you know,
right.
I would say at that point. So we didn't really understand why it was done or why all these styles came about or what you need to do for a project, but it was more visual thing. I mean, there was not much to read about or not much that we were explained that this is why you do a certain thing. And maybe the visual aspect actually comes secondary to what all other things that you need to do. So yeah, that's what how we learned at that point. What was your question again? I mean, was there an extension to that?
The extension was to that was, you know, the shift that you've seen when you're being taught architecture at that point of time, the kind of architecture styles there, to what you're doing now or what the current phase of architecture is. How do you see that shift?
I think now everything is available. I mean, it's so quick that any like a project completed just a week ago, I mean, you get to see that.
Yeah.
So I think that way the information is extensive. So I think that gives the present architects a direct resource, I would say, to kind of understand things and then go about their projects. I think at our time, it was very difficult. We would like work really hard to get a magazine copy or something like that. Like we had architectural record or review at that point. So even our libraries wouldn't have anything. We would, and there was no computer at that point. So that made it very difficult for us to get the resources at that point.
In the general society at that time, what was the perception, like when you say you're a student of architecture, when you're studying architecture, did people around you understand what architecture was? Because I think it's even till this day, it's a very, this profession, of course it's a young profession, it has been formalized like post-independence, but do people think when we say we are architects or even at that time?
In the US, it doesn't matter to me what people think about it. As long as, we do justice to the work that we are doing.
No, but do they understand our profession or?
At that time, you are lesser. But in the US, everybody somehow wanted to become an architect. I heard that a lot.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. If you say you're an architect, they would say, wow, you're an architect, or things like that. So, in the US, predominantly, they would see architecture as something like beyond regular things. I would see in a lot of episodes like Seinfeld and other things also. The actors would always wanted to become an architect, or they always dream of becoming an architect or something like that. So that's the perception in the US. In India, they might not understand it at that time. They would think we do only elevations and stuff like that. So even now some people do think that, would you do the elevation stuff for me and things like that. But it's okay.
What about you? For you, when did you first hear this term architecture? When did you start understanding this profession? At what age?
For me, it was very early. I think when I was in school, like about 6th, 7th class or something.
Oh, okay.
That's when I actually wanted to become an architect.
Oh, okay.
So my dad is a civil engineer.
Right. Okay.
So I was good at art and all that, drawing and all that in school. So I wasn't very bright in the studies that way. So as an alternative, I think I somehow chose it very early. I didn't understand what architecture was really at that point, but somehow I did want to do that, and it was a smooth sailing after that. I got seat in JNTU immediately after my second 12th or something like that. So, and then it's been going on and I have no regrets, so it's been good.
At that time, what was the kind of architecture that maybe as students you would go for a case study, or buildings that you would, at that time, what kind of buildings would you study?
We had, if I remember, we had been to the IDBI, which was designed by Charles Correia,
right.
Which was a brilliant building at that point. And then
it's very inaccessible right now.
It must be, you don't even see it from outside anymore.
Yeah.
And we had been to some villages. I think Rudraram was one village that we had gone for some case study. That was really nice. So but they were quite rare in our time. We probably did about 4 or 5 of those things in the 5 year time that we were there. I see that happening more, and I see the kind of projects that are formulated for students are also much more interesting now, especially design and other things. So the kind of tasks that are given to the students are good, I would say.
Well, I have some questions from some of our viewers who wrote into us, so I'm going to ask those right now.
Sure.
These are actually mostly related to, I think people who wrote to me are mostly just graduating architects or young architects. So they have very particular questions about, you know, as a young architect, what would your best advice be? Some thumb rules when you're starting an architectural practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that mine is an ideal kind of practice, so I'm not the expert in that, but yeah, whatever you feel your strengths are, I think you would pretty much go about it. But yeah, finally, I think it's the end product, the building that you're designing, which is important. So yeah, that should not be neglected, but each person has his way of going forward of how he takes his practice, so it should suit his personality, I would say.
I always had this doubt when you're starting off an architecture practice, you already have set amount of information, you know, particular standard construction techniques. But when you're trying to innovate new techniques by yourself, how does that process, like if there's a standard detail that can be sent aside and it can be implemented mm-hmm. immediately, but what about new details? How do you, because there's a lot of innovation that you keep doing through your projects, especially extensively through Word mm-hmm. and all these other stuff. So how do you test your ideas?
First of all, as far as design is concerned, any new idea that would again crop up because of the need for it to be on site for a particular requirement, whether let's say you would do louvers or something. So the situation for us requires that for a window you need a mosquito mesh, you need a grill for security, you need glass for vision and all that. So these restrictions would make us do some innovations where we would work all through and then finally come to a detail which is again pleasing for the eye and also has to work for all the functions that we are looking at. So we do work with lot of carpenters. We actually discuss with them to understand what is what, like each wood works in a different way. So we talk to them and then lot of times they give us inputs on what works, what doesn't work. So for every project we do work with a set, let's say the flooring person who does flooring, granite work and all that. Carpenters we work with who are extremely intelligent, I would say. Especially in the work that do, they know ins and outs of how things work. So we don't necessarily understand all those things, but sometimes we don't need to because we are looking at more wider picture. But yeah, the inputs that we can take from them are going to be quite useful. Yeah, we actually spend a lot of time on detailing.
Mm.
We do good amount of drawings. Mm. So in that way, I mean, people would follow what we've given.
Mm.
Otherwise, without the details or drawings, I mean, we try to give a drawing for everything.
Mm.
Every project, every detail, as much as possible, we do end up giving a drawing. So it's easier at the site also for them to go with the drawings and then not shift from what was already given. Otherwise, I mean, you go to the site, you yourself don't remember what it was, you keep changing stuff and all that. So, yeah, it helps doing good amount of details.
To execute a new detail that you come up with, how much of time do you think is permissible? Like, you have to go back and forth with your carpenters and other consultants. So, how much of time does that consume?
It does consume a lot, typically depending on what we are working on. Sometimes they end up not working too. Because we realize while making them that there are a lot of hardships and them being, I mean, first getting them to be manufactured or something like that. And then secondly, even after it is done, it doesn't really work like you expect them to be. So yeah, we sometimes make the sample and then we work around them and then develop them further. And then yeah, they'll be used. And I think a lot of times it does work too.
That's nice. Did you ever want to at a point also come into the teaching community? What are your thoughts on that? A lot of people are academicians and also they practice architecture. So what is your view on that?
Personally, I never wanted to get into academics. I'm not very good, I would say, at explaining stuff or things like that as far as architecture is concerned. So yeah, I never wanted to get into that. But I see it as a very useful thing because while you're teaching, you yourself
I learn
a lot.
That's true.
And again, the interaction with students or whoever that is, I think it works very well. So I think it's a very good option to go with.
Because I see a lot of practicing architects who also get into teaching, but there are two sides of it. One I see is they're established and then they go into teaching, and one is they first teach for a considered amount of time because it's also kind of like a learning phase for them again, and then they go into the practice itself. And maybe, for example, here I can give Louis Kahn was initially teaching at Yale for a long period of time, and then he started his own practice at a very later phase of his life, as I come to understand it. And then there are a lot of architects now who have well-established practices now go as visiting faculty members to a lot of these universities. So it's interesting in that sense how pedagogy also is a way, an alternative way of research through, because now you have resources and students are the resources. But have you been, like, you when you take up new interns or junior architects, what are the instant difference that you see in this current generation? Or
We get actually resumes or internship applications from all over India, and I think the portfolio is what we see first,
right?
And some are extremely good. Yeah. The kind of projects that they've already done in the college are like far, far ahead of what normally you would see. So we kind of end up most of the time taking those portfolios of those students.
Can you mention some colleges that who have interned here before, students from?
I'm not very good with names, but we've people from all over India. They've come from Kerala, they've come from Chennai, they've come from North, so they come from different places. Orissa, we have one guy. So yeah, so
the question here is, are there anyone from JNFU?
we did have a couple of them. So we have a constant, like, at least two people that would be interning. So every 6 months they keep shifting. So we have from JNFU also.
When was the last time you had an intern from
JNFU? Probably about 1.5-2 years, I think.
Oh, okay, that's not too far back. I also wanted to ask about, there's this interesting statement that I read that you said the biggest, like, maybe I'm trying to rephrase it, but correct me if I'm wrong. In one of these interviews, you said the best thing as an architect we can do is to build less, which is contrary to this entire profession where we only build.
Right.
So can you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, it is definitely not in advantage for the architects. But what I would see is anything that you built as a building or something, it's a huge impression on the place. And then once it is built, you're never going to remove it. It's always going to be there. Either you would renovate or do something like that. So I would see nature as being the best possible thing that is there already. So anything that you would remove and put in that place is not going to be as good as what it's already there. I mean, nature by itself, let's say it's vegetation, plants or whatever you see, or just plain earth or something like that. So in that aspect, I would see that anything that you would want to build should be just enough for you to sustain, or it be useful for you or your family or the city or something like that. So it should be that way in a way, though it doesn't work for us as far as the fee that we collect or the amount of SFT we build, but I think that's how it should be. I mean, if you see the state of things all over the world where the corona, let's say, effect, so all these are part and parcel of what we are doing in a way. We are building, not just us, but any other profession or anybody else for their own gain, they're kind doing something or the other, getting in lot of materials which are not even necessary now. So everything is so abundantly done, which I don't think is necessary.
Right. And on that note, I'm going to leave the viewers to think a little bit on what you just said.
Right.
But thank you so much for doing this, Mr.
Thank
Kiran.
You.
It was an absolute joy.
Same here.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.